Hey, feeling unsure about your finances these days? You're not alone. That's why Noble Gold Investments is here to help. Just hear it straight from the people who they've helped. The Noble crew walked me through everything with no stress. With their help, I could finally sleep easy at night. And now this month, Noble Gold Investments is handing out a free 5-ounce silver America the Beautiful coin if you qualify for an IRA. Invest in gold and silver with Noble Gold Investments. Go to NobleGoldInvestments.com right now. That is NobleGoldInvestments.com right now. Hey, everybody. Tanner Charlie Kirk Show. Roseanne joins the program, the legendary Roseanne Barr. Check out her show, the Roseanne Barr Podcast. I think you'll really enjoy this conversation. We dive into her story, cancel culture, humor, and at the end, we have a hilarious word association game. You're going to listen all the way through the end. You will laugh. Text it to your friends. Email us, as always, freedom@charliekirk.com. That is freedom@charliekirk.com. Buckle up, everybody. Here we go.
Charlie, what you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campus.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here.
Brought to you by the loan experts I trust, Andrew and Todd at Sierra Pacific Mortgage at andrewandtodd.com. Okay, everybody, we have the legend Roseanne Barr with us. Check out the Roseanne Barr Podcast. Roseanne, welcome to the program.
Hi, thank you for having me. It's great to be here.
I need to get one of those hats. I like that.
Isn't it cool?
I love it.
I've had it for a long time. You know, radical means root.
That's right.
That's why I'm wearing it, because the root is the human soul. And its connection to our source, our creator. So that's why I'm a radical.
Well, straight to the root. So, Roseanne, for some of our younger listeners and fans, they might not be as familiar with your story. It's fascinating and amazing. And you have...
Yeah, it is.
You have unparalleled staying power. So tell us the Roseanne Barr story.
Well, the Roseanne Barr story. Well... My mom, the way she tells it, she always starts with me as an infant, that I, when all the other little babies were sleeping soundly in their bassinets in the hospital, I was screaming and eating my fists, and they had to put me in a little tiny straitjacket. That's my mother's story of how my life began.
So nothing's really changed.
And,
yeah. So,
yeah, I guess you could say that. But then I was born into a very funny family where comedy was kind of king in our family. My dad, he himself wanted to be a stand-up comic, and he sort of trained me to love comedy and to watch it. We had a television show back in the day. There were only 3 channels, if you guys could believe that. And there on one channel, it was called The Ed Sullivan Show, and it was an hour variety show, and they'd always feature comedians. And so that was a very exciting time in my house, and my dad would be in front of the TV, and he would be yelling, comedian, comedian, you know, and we'd all run to watch the comedian. And my father, he was kind of really smart about comedy, and he would talk to us after the comic was done and tell us what the comic had done and how he would judge it. So he kind of made me a comic in a way. And then in my family also, my dad, he'd hit you in the head if he didn't like what you were doing. But if you could make him laugh, he wouldn't hit you. So it's kind of Pavlovian in a way, because I was always getting into some sort of trouble because, as my parents both said, you're never going to get a husband because, one, you don't control your eating and you have a big mouth and all you do is talk about yourself. So anyway, I was always in trouble, and I learned to be funny to kind of get myself out of trouble, although sometimes trying to be funny has gotten me in a lot of trouble.
Well, good trouble, though. As you say, you're a radical there. And so, I mean, the show became such a huge success, and it was in some ways kind of the working class, let's just say, the place where the working class could laugh and feel some commonality I mean, it was actually took place in Kane County, Illinois, Roseanne, right near where I grew up in Wheeling. I grew up in.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So why'd you pick Kane County, by the way? I mean, was that where you grew up, or is it, did you choose that? Was that the writers, or?
That was my head writer, Matt Williams. He chose that location. I was really down for it because it was so middle of America.
Yes.
And that's what I wanted, was the exact middle, you know, because I'm from Salt Lake City, Utah, which is kind of middle. It's kind of middle America in a lot of ways. And in a lot of ways, it was different. It was a weird place to be Jewish, I always say. But I learned a lot, and there were a lot of nice people there. But I was going to continue with my story. And I was always funny. So I found myself at a young age, a teenager, I would write funny things like a lot of bloggers do, like a lot of young bloggers do. And, you know, I got picked up in a couple of newspapers. So that was exciting. And then, you know, I always harbored in my dreams and my heart that I would someday be a stand-up comic. And then I was 28 years old, and I went to see this play, and it was by Gertrude Stein. And there was one poem in the play called The 28th Year. And she says, well, you don't always have to be 28 in your 28th year, but every life has a 28th year where it dawns on you what you want to do. And hearing that, I went, I'm going to do stand-up comedy. And I was a bar waitress at the time. And I always would make my customers laugh. And one day, one of my customers came in. He said, you really should go down to that comedy club downtown and go down there on amateur night. And I was just blown away that it was there. So I went down there. And that's what I started doing stand-up. And then it was about 4 years into doing stand-up there in Denver that people came and saw me and said, you need to go to LA to meet Mitzi Shore because she's really going to like what you do at the Comedy Store in LA. So that's what I did 4 years later. I walked into the Comedy Store and I did 5 minutes for Mitzi Shore. When I came off stage, Mitzi said, go do 20 minutes in the big room, which seated 400 people. And that was the very same night that I auditioned, and all the waitresses said she'd never done that before. And that was exciting. And while I was doing those 20 minutes, there were important people in the audience. One of them was a man named George Slaughter, who came up and asked me, did I want to be in his network special called The Women of Comedy? And of course, it blew my mind. And I said, yes. And he featured me. And while we were in rehearsal for that taping, The Tonight Show with Johnny Carson, their guy, Jim McCauley, he was in the audience. And he said, I'm putting you on Friday. And at that time, there had been no women stand-ups on that show for 8 years. So it was way exciting. And then, you know, I got, while I was on the Carson show, Julio Iglesias was the guest and asked me if I would open for him on an 18-city tour, to which I said, of course. And that's how I got my start. And I was seen in all these cities. And that's how that led to my getting my own TV show based on my comedy stand-up act. But when I was a little girl and I used to watch TV with my dad, he would really make fun of the TV shows and how unreal they were. And that kind of planted a seed in me too. And I'd watch them and go, there's nothing like my family or any of the families I know on there. We were a working class family. And I always had the desire to get on TV and tell the truth about how the people who were the viewers actually were, and always felt insulted by what they were putting across because I never saw anything like any of that. None of the dads in my neighborhood came home in a suit and presided over this perfect family. They were all tired. You know, they were all laying on the couch, and the mom was like, you know, yelling at everybody to get ready for dinner or what have you, or to help out in the family. And you know, you go do the laundry or take it out and put it in the dryer, and these kind of things that working families, you know, the reality of life for working families. I wanted to see it on TV, and I guess I felt like that it was my mission to do it. And I always felt it was my mission to make the viewer feel happy instead of to denigrate them, which I felt television was doing, particularly to the, well, to everybody in the family and the family itself. It never it never showed what I thought was important, and I felt it was important for me to get on there and do it. And that was kind of what happened.
You were patient zero for cancel culture. Roseanne, walk us through what happened.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God. It was a nightmare from beginning to end. Well, I went back because, you know, they kept on begging me to come back to TV. And so I thought, hey, this is a good time for me to come back to TV because I think I could do a comedy about people getting along despite their political differences, which I felt was needed in our country because I felt like they were really dividing people. And maybe I could come back and remind people about family and love and understanding and all those kind of things that I always had on my show. And I felt like it was a religious mission again for me. And so I went back, and I should never have done that. I still don't understand why they wanted me so bad to beg me like that. But almost immediately, it was like being Daniel thrown into the lion's den. I mean, nobody thought like me, and everyone hated Trump. They just hated him, even though he had employed so many of them on his many television ventures. And they all got jobs for him. So I saw what happened though. And it was the very radicalized left that really changed the Democratic Party when they came to the center, thanks to Pelosi. And, you know, they just put everybody off. And now I feel they've pushed everybody away because it's such a small minority of these radicals that have taken over the Democrat Party. But, you know, more and more people, it's becoming clear to them every day. But I was fighting those people. And just the example I give is, well, I say it is like being in the lion's den because I was the only one. And there were a lot of people at the network who were very Obama-sized, I call it, you know, to where they'd already made judgments about me based on hating Trump and not knowing anything about me. And even though they worked with me and saw that every episode I did was, you know, against racism, homophobia, and all the other phobias, everything I've ever done has been about that, about the larger civil rights of, you know, the marginalized in society. Everything in my life has been for that.
You send out this tweet, which I found was hilarious, about Valerie Jarrett, and you would have thought that, you know, you threw their pagan idols into the Pacific Ocean. I mean, the reaction is you send out this single tweet about Valerie Jarrett, and they destroy everything.
Well, what I did was caption a picture, a meme, and it showed her, and, you know, she looked white to me. The only thing I knew about her besides her terrible destructive policies in the world were that she was from Iran. So, of course, you know, and that she works with many, you know, different parties in Iran. So anyway, a picture came and she looked just like a character in the movie I referenced, which also happens to be about a movie about the militarized police force that Obama started, you know, that hence her was, she was part of that. And, you know, I felt like America was disintegrating and would soon become, you know, a militarized police state, which I feel it has.
Yes.
But, you know, this was back then, and I was on the number one show, and like all the other arrogant stars, I guess you'd say, I felt I was right in that I had, as the number one star in television with 28 million viewers, which television hadn't seen anything like that in decades, I felt like I had earned the right to speak like they all do when they go up to get their awards. And I felt like I had earned for myself the right to voice my opinion against the Obama militarized police force. And that's what, and its actions in Iran and in Egypt or in the Egyptian Spring or whatever, the Arab Spring. And I follow a lot of geopolitical news, you know. I ran for president in 2012 against Obama. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I was a proper socialist in every way. And I just saw that the left had moved it so far left that it didn't belong in America anymore.
Hey, everybody. Charlie Kirk here. Do you know that the average American spends about 20 years in retirement? That's a long time to live without a steady income. We want to make sure you enjoy every moment of it and don't outlive your money. Retirement is about more than just investments. It's about living your best life. Let's not retire. Let's pivot. My friends at Pax Financial Group developed a course for the sole purpose of helping you pivot. If you want your own free guide of pivoting into the next chapter of life with purpose, visit paxfg.com/Charlie. That is paxfg.com/Charlie. I have some of my money managed by Pax Financial. They do a wonderful job. And remember, retirement is about more than just investments. The Charlie Kirk endorsement of the Pax Financial Group LLC was given for compensation, which creates an incentive to recommend Pax's advisory services. You need to make sure that disclaimer is very clear. So check it out, paxfg.com/Charlie. Okay, Roseanne, finish that thought.
I was going to finish it by saying the network called me to ask me why I committed such an egregious thing. And I said, in my defense, well, because the first phone call I got was saying that everyone's calling you a racist. And I responded by saying Muslim isn't a race, because they said, no, she's a black woman. And I said, oh, my God. So the network called, asked why I did an egregious thing like that. And I said, I thought she was white. And so they knew that I had said that. And yet the next day it was that network calling me a racist. They knew that I thought she was white. And yet the next day they were all calling me a racist and refusing to let me on any of their programs, where hosts of those programs had done blackface, by the way. They refused to let me go on those programs to explain what I meant by the tweet. So, you know, they immediately deplatformed me, canceled my show, and then began to look at ways to kill my character as well as my character, which they had already killed by calling me a racist when I've been a civil rights activist my entire life. So, you know, that's what they do. The first call was to Valerie Jarrett from Bob Iger, the head of the network. And the second call was to Michelle Obama. And then he received a third call from Barack Obama congratulating him for canceling my show, because after all, there, what is freedom of speech? And when people in the government phone a network to cancel a star and deplatform her, I knew it what didn't have a good portend to it, because they didn't mind that they lost 25 million viewers. It didn't even impact their shareholders, stockholders. They didn't care either. It was all to get Trump, to make a Trump supporter appear as a racist, because that was very, very important to them. And it was the upcoming midterm elections coming up.
Well, and
so I was used, and I knew it wasn't going to stop with me. It wasn't going to stop with my viewers, who they also canceled. I knew it wasn't going to stop there. And I knew they were after our president.
Big time. So, Roseanne, this is what I want to dive into, a couple of elements of this. When other people that are in the protected political class in Hollywood make a joke that they don't like, they'll just put them on the sidelines for a minute, or they'll give them a chance to apologize. Howard Stern made light of the Columbine shooting. Sarah Silverman wore blackface. Joy Behar wore blackface. So it's not as if you did anything that was bad. Jimmy Kimmel, right? I can go through the whole list, but let's get into this, Roseanne. Yeah. There were probably people within the network that were never happy that the populist working class in America had a revival of a television show during the Trump era, and they were waiting, and they were waiting, and they were waiting. Roseanne Barr.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And that the lead character, you know, I didn't want to be the one to support Trump, but I wanted someone on the show to do it. I thought it was too on the head for me to do it, because I'd already been vocal about, you know, being a supporter before that. But, you know, none of the other people on the show would do it. None of them, they all said, no, I can't do that. So I had to do it. And, you know, I was proud to do it too. And, but that shows you about the brainwashing there.
Yes. Well, and that it was specifically an agenda. And so, Roseanne, I want to broaden this for a second. You mentioned Kimmel, you know, the writers are all on strike on Hollywood. This shows how irrelevant. I didn't know they were on strike. That shows how little that I actually pay attention to them until people told me the writer's strike was going to be over. I said they were on strike. That shows that they're kind of irrelevant. But, you know, Roseanne, you look at those.
I said they were all complaining that they said the next scripts in Hollywood will be written by AI robots. And I said, oh, boy, then they'll be funny.
Well, and that's so you look at Kimmel, you any of these guys, and you notice the crowd claps and they don't laugh. It's more about political agreement. Humor is under attack. Roseanne, the reason they don't like you and the reason why you are an American legend is you tell the truth. Truth and humor are the same thing. You laugh because someone is noticing something you know to be true. They say in a way that you might not have thought before. We're not laughing very much as a society. Humor is under attack from every direction. In fact, humor is largely dead. Why do you think that is?
Well, I said when it happened, when Obama signed the NDAA, he made comedy illegal, and I commented that on my Twitter, whatever it's called, crawl. I said comedy is now illegal because you can't, it's a ministry of truth, just like in Ayn Rand's book, you will have to be certified before you can speak your opinion as an American. And that was frightening. It's continued to go downhill, and it's just horrifying. But I want to say comedy's having a big comeback down there in Austin, Texas, at Joe Rogan's club, which we can all go to, and Joe guarantees our freedom of speech there. Thank you, Joe. And a lot of comics are coming from all over the country, and the kind of comedy that's emanating from that place is like a renaissance of comedy. It's all political. It's all like going to putting the blame upwards instead of lateral, or
that's so smart.
Getting the laugh from
that's such a smart point.
Making fun of working class people from your elitist, college-educated point of view that you've been trained to do. But, it's not talking down with that sneer, like that Colbert sneer. It's not none of that. It's for real. And I'm so I just want everyone to know how positive I feel about what's coming up in the future, and how I see these unfolding and staggering synchronicities and minor miracles of us getting through the great big wall, the new Berlin Wall of information that's been put around our country. But we're breaking through it, and it's just fantastic to witness it. Like Paxton get, like some justice in Texas, where they tried to frame him like they're trying to, like they have been framing me. People like me who love our country and believe in integration and not segregation. And people like me who think that our veterans deserve something, that people who sent their children to fight in the wars shouldn't lose their houses. Stuff like that comes from the bottom up, not the top down, not any manufactured revolution. Or progressive revolution, and I say progressive as in cancer, not any kind of revolution that comes from the intelligentsia down, but one that comes from the living humans who do all the work, who make things go, that therefore a real grassroots revolution, which they've tried to co-opt with their hoity-toityness, but everybody sees through it now, and that is by the grace of God, I think.
Roseanne, that's such a smart point. I want to dive into that most comedy, especially post-Trump, has been punching down. Look at the smelly Walmart person. Look at the welder. Look at the, deplorable. Where comedy...
That's part of why I came back, because I just couldn't take it. I'm like, oh my God, it's disgusting. How dare they? How very effing dare they?
And it's cheap, right? But that goes to show that comics have now become the Praetorian Guard for the oligarchs. When comedy is supposed to challenge the powerful, this is why Stalin put the comics in prison. And our current comic class, actually aren't comics, because they're not making fun of, which is revealing and telling the truth about Pfizer, AstraZeneca. Look at Woody Harrelson, right?
Speaking truth to power. That's what comedy is.
Yes.
That's what the gesture was in the King's Court. He could come and make fun of the king in front of the people. And the king, would laugh at himself, and therefore the people would give their consent because they loved a guy who could laugh at himself. That showed that he wasn't corrupted. But when these people can't laugh at themselves, and even the way they look, that might be, similar to a character in a movie, that's a real red flag of fascism.
Mm-hmm. And what's so funny is they say they're anti-fascist, which is just hilarious. But Roseanne.
Well, you know, everything is the opposite of what it means. Like, you know, when they say Green New Deal, that means they're going to destroy everything living in the world. So, you know, they always use the language that makes you think, oh, like, you know, like these scams the Bush family ran where they said security and fiduciary duty in their, you know, banking scams. Come on, people. You got to learn. The key is reverse the reversal. You're already being told the reverse of the truth. So you just, all you have to do is just reverse it one more time to know the truth, because they get the truth and corrupt it. So uncorrupt it. That's why you got a thinking cap that came from the root.
To the root. And so you look at Woody Harrelson, who goes and does an SNL open, which is hilarious, about Pfizer and AstraZeneca and Moderna, and he gets criticized.
Yeah, he did that right after my Fox special where I made fun of the vaccine, and I was the first one to do it, and it was to everybody saying, don't do it. But after I did it, like 2 weeks after my Fox special, then he was on SNL doing it, which I applaud him for, but I was pissed, and I said, he's stealing my act.
Well, a lot of people have stolen your stuff.
Oh, they all steal my stuff, but I don't even care anymore. And now I just troll it. Like I go to trolls on Twitter. I mean, I troll. I go to powerful people on Twitter and I type something in that I know they're going to subsume, consume and use and not give me credit. I don't even care if I get credit anymore. The need for good ideas that set people straight and speak truth to power and speak to gather in your soulmates, that's all we have to fight with is words.
Yes. And what you're such a deep and profound point, which is that the comics for years were the rebels against the powerful. I can't get off this point, and I haven't heard anyone else articulate this. And now the comics are the defenders of the powerful, and the jokes you are not allowed to tell are against the powerful people. And you know this because the powerful people are always acting as if they're the marginalized group. No, they're not. Like Fauci's like, I'm under attack. You're in charge of everything. The FBI is in charge of everything. There's never been such a target-rich environment for comedy in the history of the human species.
That is exactly true, because the best comedy comes from shooting down the arrogance, taking the bubble out, taking the, you know, piss out of it. You know what I mean? That's the funniest stuff. But when we're all afraid to laugh at it, you know, that's like saying, hey, to the emperor, you ain't got no clothes on, pal. We want you to, you know, but now it's gone so far that it's not enough for the emperor to be naked in the street. He has to wave his junk right in our kids' face, too, because they get off on humiliating us.
Yeah, you really connected some dots to me, Roseanne. Powerful people who are LARPing, live action role playing as the oppressed. Meanwhile, the welder, the carpenter, the electrician, the teacher, the mom, they can't pay their mortgage.
The children.
Yeah, they can't pay for gasoline, but it's their fault that they exist, that they breathe. Hey everybody, Charlie Kirk here. We are saving babies with Preborn by providing free ultrasounds. When you introduce a girl to her baby by providing an ultrasound, you're giving her the truth at the most important time in her life. And more than 85% of the time when she sees the baby and hears the baby's heartbeat, she will choose life. The voices that call themselves pro-choice are loud and proud, and they are everywhere. It might feel like an uphill battle, but there is no better fight to fight than with the truth of an ultrasound. $140 gives 5 mothers a free ultrasound and saves babies. $280 can save 10 babies. For just $28 a month, you can save a baby a month for less than a dollar a day. And $15,000 gift will provide an ultrasound machine that will save lives for years to come. Whether you want to save one baby or five or hundreds, that opportunity is just a phone call or click away. I am a donor to Preborn, and you should be too. Call 833-850-BABY. That is 833-850-2229. Or go to preborn.org/Kirk. If you want to save one baby or five or hundreds, the opportunity is just right there. Go to preborn.org/Kirk. All right. Check out the Roseanne Barr podcast. I have subscribed. You need to subscribe. It's excellent. All right, Roseanne, let's play a little word association. You ready?
Yeah.
First thing that comes to mind throughout this list, Zelensky.
Criminal.
Putin.
Scary.
Elon Musk.
Scary.
Donald Trump.
King.
Ron DeSantis.
I can't think of the word, but the Trojan horse.
Hillary Clinton.
Satan.
Michelle Obama.
Satan.
Joan Rivers.
Victim.
Of?
Satan.
Kamala Harris.
Satan.
Joe Biden.
I can't say more than one word. Mask.
You could maybe bend the rules a little bit. Hunter Biden.
Jim
Carrey in a mask. Okay. Hunter Biden.
Because no one could fall up the stairs that good but Jim Carrey.
That's right.
Hunter Biden. Undercover.
Okay, here's some new ones. LeBron James.
Cuckoo.
Tucker Carlson.
King.
Jimmy Kimmel.
Freak.
I'm going to save a good one for last. But here's a Nancy Pelosi.
Satan's boss. Oh, that's two words.
Point taken. And then finally, Gavin Newsom.
Clone.
Roseanne Barr, Word Association. Roseanne, close it all up. Tell us why we should subscribe to your podcast. And just let's wrap this conversation how you see fit.
You should subscribe to my podcast because I try to tell the truth, and I am shortly going to begin showing people how they can overcome their MKUltra mind control through meditation given by God through Torah. And we can win easily if we do that and put our heads together, and with love for each other, we're going to win. And we already have won because God already did win, but we just have to witness it and be aware of it. And I have good guests.
Oh, you have great guests. You have Carrie Lake. You got to check it out. Tease us more. Meditation via the Torah. Tell us more about that.
Well, there's 5 steps to it. And I want everyone to know, because you can close down your MKUltra mind control that the dark side has put on you. And it's 5 steps. The first one is decide to meditate. And the 5th one is to rest before you begin again. And the ones in the middle are about taking in breath and expelling it. And I'm going to talk about how wonderful it is that we have this weapon, this way of surviving. And all we have to do is just breathe in the air.
Breathe in the air. Check out the Roseanne Barr podcast. Roseanne, I hope to meet you in person sometime soon. God bless you, and thank you for your great work. You're very special. Thank you.
God bless you, and thank you for your great work.
Thank you. Roseanne Barr, everybody. Thanks so much for listening, everybody. Email us, as always, freedom@charliekirk.com. Thanks so much for listening, and God bless.
For more on many of these stories and news you can trust, go to charliekirk.com.
Lots of channels, nothing to watch, especially if you're searching for the truth. It's time to interrupt your regularly scheduled programs with something actually worth watching. Salem News Channel. Straightforward, unfiltered, with in-depth insight and analysis from the greatest collection of conservative minds, like Hugh Hewitt, Mike Gallagher, Sebastian Gorka, and more. Find truth. Watch 24/7 on SNC.TV and on Local Now, Channel 525.